Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Craig Burley. Frank Leboeuf and Stevie Nicol will be joining us a little later on to discuss the Liverpool's title chances. But we'll kick things off with a Liverpool player who's on international duty at the moment. Of course, Sadio Mane playing for Senegal, scoring for Senegal as well. Before that, though, a nasty clash of heads between him and the goalkeeper who would stay on, at least until he opened the scoring, would be subbed off and since has been taken to hospital. It finished 2-0, Senegal through to the quarterfinals. Let's welcome to the show more on this, shall we? Nader Manua joins us, as does Colin Udo. Colin, Senegal get it done, not particularly impressive. And of course, all the news really about Sadio Mane.
Oh yeah, certainly. I mean, Senegal haven't been particularly impressive at this tournament. And to be honest, it's doubtful if they would have got through with 11 men on the field. So good luck to them. I hope they do much better, but they don't look like a team that can go much further. But speaking of Sadio Mane, I understand from over there that he's in some sort of concussion protocol and he will be under observation for the next 48 hours before he will be cleared to do anything else. But the question that needs to be asked is, why was he even allowed to continue after a clash of heads? He should have been taken right off, put into concussion protocol and monitored. I mean, that he was even on the field to score that goal was a travesty.
Nadim, you surprised that he stayed on?
Yeah, I was very, very surprised. And when you look back at the video, you can tell he was out, in my opinion, from the way that he fell. Like, he basically landed and crumpled on the floor, head smashed off the ground. And it's just, it was crazy to see him carry on. But I think in some ways, like, I think that shows one of the flaws within the system. I think we were so keen, especially with the bigger players, asking them, are you okay? And they're going to say yes, but the reality is they're probably not. And I think you need to take better care of them because you never know about the long-term effects of this. And he was out. Like, you saw the same with the goalkeeper for them. He tried to get up and play on in the game, but it looked like he didn't even know where he was on planet Earth. So for me, I think they've messed that up by allowing him to continue playing. Obviously, he scored the goal and so on, but, you know, they really need to take more care. And it wouldn't surprise me if, say, he misses the next round because it just seems like it's coming too soon because it was a very, very severe clash of heads.
And I tell you who won't be happy either, his club.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Because you send players away as a club, you know, big assets, big investments, big player for them, and you expect proper medical attention. At the very minimum, it's not just a challenge, which is an unfortunate, you know, part of the game, the head clash, but it's the landing. And here we have a classic case scenario, like Nadim said. As players, we always say pretty much, yes.
You're fine.
Unless it's an absolute stonewaller, you can't play on. I'll play on, right? That's the most players' mentality. But here we have a scenario, it seems, where the medical staff have more of an interest in the result than the actual welfare right. of the player. Knockout stages, African Cup of Nations, big tournament, big player. Let's get him back out there. This kind of decision has to be taken out of players' hands. And as Nedham was saying, this is put the protocol back, certainly in this tournament, by making this decision, because that was a bad head knock to play on.
Elsewhere, Morocco in action against Malawi. Malawi would open the score. Brilliant goal from Gallardino. However, Morocco would score two to get the job done and book a place in the quarterfinals. Meanwhile, of course, the other side of that bracket will see Gambia take on Cameroon. The sad news coming out from the host country, of course, yesterday was the fact that eight died in that stampede outside the stadium. Colin, what's been said about that over the last 24 hours?
I think just that, you know, there's just been poor security arrangements, poor security, poor access control, just overall. I'll tell you what, I arrived in Cameroon and on the night of a game on match day minus one, I walked into the stadium with a bag that could have contained anything. Nobody stopped me at the gate, and yet there were policemen heavily armed with guns at the gate. I walked in, nobody stopped me, nobody asked me any question. I went into the stadium, I was looking for the media center. I walked into almost every should we say, every place that I could, the dressing room, the media center, the field. I had access to everything with nobody asking me a single question. I could have been anybody. I could have been carrying anything, and I could have been doing anything, and nobody even stopped me. So that level of, you know, lack of security, lack of access control, a lack of organization is exactly what has led to that stampede that led to 8 people dead. And I think, you know, everybody at CAF, starting from the president downwards, has to take absolute full responsibility for all of these lapses.
Now, are they going to learn their lesson from that incident? And things going to be improved between now and the end of the tournament, Colin?
Look, to be honest, it's doubtful. The way this CAF Exco has gone about things, the way CAF is being run now, I'm going to be honest with you, it's an absolute shambles. You know, I mean, even the president hosting a tournament that is the flagship tournament of CAF is shuttling back and forth between Cameroon. He's supposed to be sitting down there monitoring things that are going on, not running away to someplace, running his own business. It's not a part-time job. Even if it is, this is the flagship tournament. He should be there monitoring everything. I mean, can you imagine the FIFA president or the UEFA president not being present when either the FIFA World Cup or the Euros are being organized? That is absolutely not on.
This is unbelievable, isn't it? 8 people have lost their life going to a game of football. As Colin just described there, this is a flagship for the region. You know, Colin's words are shambles. I mean, let me go back to France 98, the World Cup. Even the players had to have the accreditation.
Right.
We were not allowed to go in a stadium until our accreditation was checked.
Exactly, Craig. I walked in there without credentials. I did not have any credentials on. I had just arrived, and I walked into the stadium, and I had access to every single place. The VIP, the player dressing room, the mix zone, everywhere. I walked in everywhere. I was looking for the media center. How is that even allowed to happen?
Did that surprise you, though, Colin?
It shocked me. I've covered tournaments. I've covered the World Cup. I've covered the Olympic Games, everything. And if I'm going to look for accreditation or credentials, it's actually outside of the stadium, you know, before the, and you can't get access to the venue on the day before the match. In fact, even the morning of the game, I was going to get my credentials. I actually walked into the stadium still carrying my bag that could have contained anything. Absolutely anything. And no, I was sitting down there. I mean, they were supposed to come at 8 a.m. They didn't show up until about 9:30 or so. And I was sitting down there. I could have been anybody. I could have been carrying anything. And nobody stopped me.
All major tournaments usually have perimeter fencing out with the main stadiums. And they have airport checkpoint scanners for all fans going in. I mean, generally speaking, playing at the World Cup and then covering World Cups as a broadcaster, being there, is you don't get within a certain distance unless you've got the accreditation, and the supporters don't get within a certain distance unless they've got a ticket.
Yeah.
Then if you've got a ticket, everything else is checked from there, the bags and everything else. So to have this lapse and such a relaxed scenario at such a major tournament is unthinkable and it's unforgivable. I mean, seriously, when this tournament's finished, and hopefully there's no more incidents, people are going to have to be fired for this.
Yeah.
It's just not acceptable for major, major events around the globe, particularly in today's world where there's a lot of crazy things going on, so the security has to be super tight. This is not acceptable.
Meanwhile, the action continues on Wednesday, and as I mentioned, without doubt, the standout tie, Ivory Coast, are taking on Egypt. Ivory Coast come into this game as favourites. Egypt have not impressed so far in this tournament. Nadim, who are you going for?
See, so I'm going for Ivory Coast, and the reason I'm going for them is because I think they're capable of scoring quite a few goals. I think they've got 6 so far through the 3 games, and I'm seeing people like Pepe stepping up. You know, he's got 2 goals and an assist in his 2 games that he's played in. Whereas for Egypt, as we said there, they've not really impressed. They maybe have the best player in the whole tournament, but it feels like there's an over-reliance upon him to just make something happen. Whereas for the Ivory Coast, it seems like there's a spread of a threat, because it could be Pepe, it could be Gravel, it could be Haller, it could be Sangare, I think, in midfield. So I think they have more threats, more dangers. And as a consequence for their style of football, I think they can go out and win it. But one thing that we've seen is that, you know, some of the countries from like West Africa versus North, the North seem to be doing quite well at the moment. So I think going to have to keep an eye on that. It's going to be a contrast in styles. But as I say, I'm leaning to Ivory Coast.
Who's your pick, Colin?
You know what? I tend to agree with Nedum. And considering he's a former defender, I'm surprised he hasn't talked about how good Ivory Coast have been defensively. You know, so I'm kind of surprised he didn't mention that. But seriously, I'm actually going with Ivory Coast in this one.
Is it?
Brilliant. Thank you very much, guys.
Nobody's
going to
bring me on TV.
Sorry,
nobody's going to bring me on TV to talk about defending. Never.
No,
never,
no,
ever,
that's
ever.
The, yeah.
No
that, so we still wonder why. Thank you very much, Colin. Stay safe. We'll be looking back, of course, at that game on the next edition of ESPN FC. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. 9 points separate Manchester City and Liverpool at the top of the table. However, if Liverpool win their game in hand, then that is down to sixth. City still very much odds on, of course, to defend their title. But as you welcome in, Stevie and Frank to the show, Nadim's still with us as well. Stevie, I'll start with you. Are we going to have more of a title race than maybe we expected before we saw Mane and Salah go off to the African Cup of Nations? We thought, well, maybe Liverpool would struggle without them. They clearly haven't. They've got those two wins. Does that then mean they are more in this title hunt than we kind of were expecting?
I think so. I don't think there's any doubt it's a two-horse race. You know, Chelsea are definitely out of this. We can forget about that. But the truth is that, you know, the worry we had when Salah and Mane left was where the goals were coming to. And again, we should have known. The guy who's been doing it since he arrived at Liverpool, Diego Jota, has sort of taken on the mantle. Yes, they had a hiccup in the cup game against Arsenal, but other than that, they're creating chances and scoring goals. So yes, I think we've got a title race. I wouldn't turn round and say that Liverpool are going to win it, but I think we've got a race, no question.
I think helped by the City dropping points, obviously.
At St Mary's.
St Mary's, so that obviously helps. But yeah, I think we can see potentially something that's going to be somewhat competitive. But I don't think City are going to drop too many points like they did at the weekend. So I think Liverpool are going to have to put almost a flawless run together leading up to that game with Man City. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I don't see City dropping the points in two or three games like they did at the weekend. I think that's an anomaly for me. I think they're going to see off most teams.
Nadim, are you surprised that Liverpool have coped so well without a couple of their big stars?
Not particularly, no, because as those guys were leaving, I didn't think they were necessarily going to change the identity of Liverpool Football Club. And to add to that, as Stevie's said there, like Diogo Jota was there, you know, Salah left and now Diogo Jota was the active highest scorer in the Premier League. And, you know, he's carried on about his business. So, like, as I say, you look at that team, you look at the midfield, look at the back line, like, Liverpool's still a very, very good side, and the teams that they've come up against have been more than capable of winning those games because they're still a step ahead. So even though, you know, they're not at their absolute best, they've always, it feels to me like they've always still got enough to be able to beat most sides in the Premier League. And I think once those guys come back, yeah, the race is on. But I'd argue that for them, they never thought it was over. I think this is a side where, you know, the two years prior, they grew nearly 200 points in the Premier League with basically that sort of side there. So who are we to doubt them when they're more than capable in terms of getting those points on the board, and it doesn't always have to come with a flawless performance either.
Frank Leboeuf, welcome to the show. Let's get straight to the maths of it. What percentage chance do you give of Liverpool winning the title?
I would say 20% because, as Craig mentioned, you know, you have to accept the fact that Manchester City will have to lose two games For, in order for Liverpool to go to the same amount of points if they win the game that they have in hands, which is doubtful, because if they drew last week, they won, 11, 12 games in a row. And I think for me, they're really the contender. So I really hope they're going to do that. Well, that Liverpool's going to fight until the end to get the excitement that we are looking for in the Premier League. But I have doubts. I think Manchester City is, for me, the favourite and will never drop too many points to make sure Liverpool get back to the business. So, no, I only 20% for the sake of it, but no more than that.
I thought you saved the percentages for Don.
I know, I do, but I feel it's apt now, because I remember we were talking on Sunday and you gave it 70-30.
Well, it's not a great deal of difference.
Well, a little bit of a difference.
Well, 70-30, 60-40, 80-20, whatever you want.
Well, it's quite a big difference, isn't there? Would you prefer 60% off or 80% off?
I'm 70-30, whatever it is. I mean, the odds are stacked against them at the moment, but it's not untenable. It's not 12 points. Going back to the team selection, it's almost, I mean, they lost two players, but in some sense it was almost like losing one, if that makes sense, because the front line for a little while had been Mane, Salah and Jota. Mm-hmm. You lose those two wide players, but Firmino comes back in, and so you're losing two players but gaining a hugely experienced player coming back into the team who's hopefully going to hit form again. So that really has lessened the blow, plus who they've played. Palace are decent. And Brentford are not the worst, but Brentford at Anfield want to come and play, and that was always a good fit for Liverpool in a sense. So in some sense, the dominoes have stacked well for them so far,
yeah.
And they've taken advantage of it, and now they need to put a run together. But it does need, City do need to be pushed, there's no doubt about it, and somebody needs, Chelsea have not been capable, and I think Liverpool at the moment look. I don't know what the boys think, but I'm kind of more worried about them defensively.
Right.
With the upcoming games than I am about them scoring goals.
Overall, you take a look at the fact that obviously they have different priorities. I think I'm right in saying this, in the fact that Liverpool fans want to win the title, Manchester City fans want to win the Champions League. Does that come into play at all?
No, hold on.
What?
I don't think that's correct.
No? Which part is
Man City? I'm a lot of Man City fans. And Nadim will be able to talk much better about this than me.
Right.
Seem to have, you're looking at me like that, they seem to have a problem with, it seems, UEFA and some of these competitions. And my understanding is that they're happy to be winning their domestic title. I think it's the board and the manager that are more keen to be delivering the Champions League, obviously. But I think, I mean, I'm not saying the City fans wouldn't want to do it. But,
no, but they've won the league many times. They've never won the Champions League. That's what it's about.
Am I wrong, Nadim? Or
tell him he's wrong, Nadim.
No, you're spot on. No, it's Dan trying to stir the pot again. I think what you're saying is perfectly valid. Like, when you think about it for City, like, they do want to win the Champions League. The players obviously want to. But at what expense? You know, they've got a potential 6-point lead over Liverpool in the league. The collapse, if they were to lose this title, but then they won the Champions League, would be spoken about more than the Champions League itself would as an overall sort of concept, because that would be alarming. So I think the bread and butter is the league. I think if you win the league and the Champions League, then that's probably what they really want to achieve. But I don't think a season where that's what they win and nothing else, I don't think that's seen as a massive success, because yes, they will tick a box and say they've won it, but there'll be significant question marks going into the next season, and they tend not to have those because domestically they do so well.
Get that pie off your face.
It's a bit of ambition, see.
It's the manager that wants to do it, and the board, and that's understandable. But you said to me...
No, I said to everyone. No, I know.
No, you prefaced your question with City fans.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough.
Yeah. That's what's wrong.
Well, that's Nadim's take. What does he know? He lives in this high-class castle. Doesn't really associate with the real fans. Frank, if you're a player, what would you prefer to win from a City perspective, given that you've already won the Premier League?
They haven't.
They have. They won three and last four.
Go with you.
Oh yeah, I thought you meant this year. Sorry.
Yeah, by the way, do you want to put anything else in his mouth down while you're going
along there? Shut up, Stevie. I'm not talking to you. Sort your hair out,
yeah.
Frank.
Yeah, right.
I mean, listen. Yeah. You go and comb your hair.
Well, because don't bother coming to me. You know what?
I think
no sense.
Dan is. Danny's trying to find an ally, and I will go with him. Yes, of course, if you're a player and you're a Manchester City player, you want to win the Champions League because you won a couple of times the Premier League. But, you know, one sure is better than two maybe. And if you can get the Premier League and make sure that you can get it, after you can think about the Champions League. So I think the present for the Manchester City player is to secure the Premier League title, and after maybe see if they can do with the Champions League, which is going to be a more difficult task.
France, as we've seen before, a terrible ally for anyone. Stevie.
I think both is the answer. No, don't try.
That's bad. That's bad because you all know that we love to surrender, but we never give up.
Go on then, Stevie. What do you want to say?
Yeah, go on.
Enlighten us.
160 million%, the owners are interested in the Champions League. I'm pretty sure if you offered them one or the other, they wouldn't even think about the Premier League. But the problem you got, Dan, against you in particular, is that the fans who support City, the majority of them, have been supporting them for a long, long time. And they understand the game, certainly the way it is in home, and they know that the bread and butter is the most important. Winning your league has always been and will always be the most important thing. And so the Premier League title easily is more important than the Champions League to the fans.
Stevie, can you confirm or deny whether your hair is scraping along the ceiling in your house as we speak?
Well, if I hadn't put some gel on and patted it down, you probably wouldn't be able to see the top of it.
You've patted that down?
My God.
Goodness me.
I never knew
getting
anymore
I'm getting it caught.
Honestly.
It's getting caught on Thursday, right?
Okay. I don't want to talk about it. I'm not part of that conversation.
I'd rather have a Champions League than get my hair cut. How about that?
Well, they want to win both. Let's be honest about it.
But we couldn't sit here and go, I couldn't say, oh, they want to win both, don't they?
No, but they need, I think, from the manager's perspective, I think he is desperate. No, he'll probably say publicly that it's not a big deal, but I think privately, there are still people. I think you have to be a fool if you don't think he's an absolutely great coach. But there are still some out there that are hitting him over the head with the fact that he went to Bayern Munich and he wasn't able to deliver the Champions League like he did at Barca, and it's a similar scenario at Man City at the moment. And if he leaves City, even with all the success he's had in brilliant football, that will still raise its head again. And I think from his personal perspective, as well as the ownership, he's desperate to put that to bed. He had a great chance last year. Well, he's had a great chance most years, but going to the final against Chelsea, team selection. They're in a similar scenario again. Nothing's changed. They've already played PSG off the field. They're in a great position. They get one of the best squads. There is no reason that they... It's not easy. There's no reason why they can't win both these competitions. And I think, personally, he needs to put this to bed by doing it.
Extra Time is, as always, available over on our YouTube channel. I can't remember who's... I think Frank, Stevie and Gab are joining us today. This is yesterday's edition where we're talking about Stevie's sweater.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It has the potential to be the biggest transfer that we see in the January window. Suggestions are that Dusan Vlahovic is on his way to Juventus. Of course, such a hot prospect, one of the best strikers around and still only 21 years of age. As we welcome Gab Marcoli with us to discuss this potential move. Gab, let's discuss this potential move. What's its potential?
Well, right now it's still potential, but it's certainly, as you said, it's on its way. There's always three components to a move. Is there a deal between the two clubs? The answer is yes. I'm told it's around 70 million euros plus 5 million euros in easy bonuses, in other words, easily attainable bonuses, plus another 5 million in difficult bonuses, among them stuff like Juventus winning the Champions League. So it could be as high as 80 million. Is there a deal between the club and the player? They're very, very close to a deal. There's a deal in principle. They haven't put pen to paper on that part yet. And the third part is there a deal between the club and the agents? That, I think, could potentially the final stumbling block. Obviously, it's what's kept Vlahovic from moving to other clubs who were interested in him. His agents demanding very high commissions, demanding something like it was 15 to 18 million for some clubs. I'm told they're now asking for 10 to 12 million. I don't think Juve want to pay that. They're going to try to bring that number down. There's also suggestions they want a percentage of the sell-on fee. Again, Juve working to bring that down before they put pen to paper. But I think at this point, given what's happened in Florence, the reaction of the fans, and given how excited the Juve world is, the Juveverse is at the prospect of Vlahovic coming in, they're going to feel that they're in a pretty strong position to negotiate this down, and I think they're confident that they can get it done.
Gab, we're seeing some nasty comments, aren't we, from the Fiorentina fans?
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, look, this was very ugly, and it's ugly on two levels. One is there is a long history of animosity between Juve and Fiorentina. You saw it when Federico Chiesa left. Fiorentina at the time wanted to sell him abroad. You saw it when Roberto Baggio left way back in 1990. Fiorentina didn't want to sell him at all. Baggio probably didn't even want to go back then. So in Vlahovic's case, to see him leave, he had 18 months left on his contract. He hadn't extended his deal, but he kept talking about how he wanted to stay. His agents kept turning down requests, or they were demanding far too much in commission. Fiorentina tried to sell him abroad. There was interest from a number of clubs, inquiries from a number of clubs. I think Arsenal coming the closest, but they're simply scared off because the agents were demanding, what they consider was silly money, 15, 18 million plus a release clause and all this other stuff. I think few clubs are willing to do that in this market. So in the end, he ends up going to Juve, who are the only club, or looks as if he's going to Juve, I should say, deal not done yet. And I think that really stings. And now suggestions that this is what he wanted all along. I'm not convinced of that. But it's always very, very difficult when you have a player saying one thing and then doing something else. And I think maybe it's definitely over the top, the threats and whatever else. But I think in the end, Fiorentina might say, we didn't get a bad deal at all. This is a lot of money that's going to be coming our way for a player who, would go to free transfer in 18 months if he doesn't extend.
Meanwhile, Donny van der Beek linked to a move away from Manchester United on loan. Crystal Palace, one of the clubs that he's been cited, maybe could move to. Of course, a lot of talk about the fact that he's just done nothing. He hasn't really been given the chance to do anything for Manchester United. Gab, what's the latest on this?
Well, I think it's pretty evident that if the right club comes along, United are happy to let him go on loan, but not a loan with the option to make the loan permanent, because they apparently want the new manager, whoever it is who takes over from Rangnick, to evaluate all the players that they have, including guys like Van de Beek and Anthony Martial, and be able to bring them back. There was interest from Palace. There's interest as well from Valencia. It's been reported. This guy wants to get on the pitch. There's no obvious position for him right now. He's not really in Rangnick's plans. So I think it just makes sense for him to get a bit of a shop window.
It's quite an incredible story, really. This guy obviously came over with a big reputation, a lot of excitement around him. And he just doesn't seem to have been given a chance, not only by Rangnick, but either Solskjaer as well.
But it's not the first. You know, even from Holland coming into Man United, I think to Memphis Depay, who definitely played more than Van de Beek, but we didn't see the talent levels that we saw from him in Holland. Then he goes to France. He resurrects his career. Obviously, he's at a troubled Barcelona at the moment, so that may not turn out to be a great move on the pitch. But yeah, Van de Beek's a much better player than I think what we've seen. But clearly, a bit like Anthony Martial, the guy just needs to play, and he's surplus to requirements at Manchester United, obviously. And he needs to try and, as Gab said, get minutes on the pitch. So it makes sense to try and get him out. Where he's going to end up remains to be seen.
Stevie?
I would love to know what's going through Van der Beek's head. You know, all the things that we're talking about. You know, Jan brought it up a couple of weeks ago. You know, it's not just one manager that hasn't played Van der Beek. I think it's, what, three? And then you look at him, and then Craig's talking about Martial there as well. Well, as far as his personality, he couldn't be further away from Martial. You know, for a guy that never gets a game and is lucky to get 5 minutes at the end of a game, he always seems to have a good attitude and have a smile on his face. And so it really doesn't make any sense when you think and saw what he did at Ajax and then coming to United. I mean, I can't even remember him doing anything. I can't even remember him touching the ball hardly. So I don't know what's going through this guy's head, but it has to be get me out of here as fast as you can. Has to be.
Go on, Gab.
No, I don't know if it's what goes through Van de Beek's head or what went through United's head when they signed him, because if you look at the position he played at Ajax, that's not, when we've seen him, that's not the position he's played for Manchester United. So, you know, you wonder, they have the scouts, technical departments, or reports that Solskjaer never really wanted him. Fine, guys, talk to each other. If we bring this guy in, you know, the position he played at Ajax was in midfield, in a three, sometimes a little further forward. That's where Bruno Fernandes is. If you don't trust him to play in your central midfield group because you've got McTominay and Fred and sometimes Pogba, then don't sign him. Sign somebody else. Sign somebody who's going to get on the pitch.
But that's the other head scratcher, as Gab said, because he can play he can play a bit of both, but he can play a little deeper in midfield, pick the ball up, start attacks, tidy on the ball, good talent. But it's not the most difficult. It's not like trying to get in the City midfield. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, McTominay's been strong recently. Fred's been okay, hit and miss. Pogba's been out injured. It is a weak point of the Man United side, and yet here's a guy who operated pretty well for Ajax in that position, and yet he's still not been able to really get any game time of any note. It's a head-scratcher, because that is an Achilles heel of the United team, that central midfield.
Meanwhile, Erling Haaland reports that he could be out for 6 weeks after picking up that injury in the victory for Dortmund against Hoffenheim at the weekend, Gab. How much could this affect his move away from Germany?
I don't think it affects that at all. I think, you know, his dad and his management team are very clear. It's not like, oh, Haaland's gone for 6 weeks, he must have turned bad, or, you know, I don't think this affects them one iota. I think it does. It will affect, obviously, Borussia Dortmund in their supposed chase of Bayern. I think it could affect Marco Rose's future. It just looked like he just found some sort of balance there with the three, with Royce and Malen either side of Haaland. It obviously affects them in the Champions League. But in terms of his future, I don't think there's anybody who's going to look at this and say, ooh, do we really want to spend $75 million on Erling Haaland? The answer is yes, you do. If you can get him, you take him. And if he wants to leave, obviously.
How much are you going 100%, Stevie, if you're Erling Haaland coming back from this injury, say in 6 weeks' time?
I don't think the situation that's going to happen at the end of the season is going to be in somebody like Erling Haaland's mind. I don't think it'll be any different than any other player. You know, when you pick up an injury, the first time you step back on the training field, you're a little hesitant, and you're testing it, and then you test it a bit further, and then eventually you got 100%. And once you got 100%, And by the way, you're talking about somebody who had problems with his groin his whole career. So I can tell you, you know, that's what you do. And once you get past that point and you don't feel it, disappears. It's not there. So, no, I don't think this will be in his head whatsoever.
Not like Ruud van Nistelrooy, who had a delayed move to Man United because of a ruptured anterior cruciate. I mean, we're talking about a real serious injury. That is in your head. You know, you're thinking about coming back from something serious like that, and will clubs still want me, and will I pass a medical and all this? This is, luckily for him, just a minor injury. And I think, going back to the point about his head, he just seems to me, whether he's moving in the summer or not, and it looks like he is, he's a super committed kind of player. That's right. How he plays. As Gab said, the big blow here is that Dortmund need all hands to the pump if they're even going to put some sort of half-baked title challenge up. They're going to need this guy. But then he has to do what's right for him, so that's take the right amount of time and get himself fit. And maybe from his point of view, this will stop all the chat from Dortmund about tell us about a decision.
Yes.
He'll just say, I'm concentrating and getting myself back fit, and I'll tell you when I'm ready. And when my team's ready, and my dad's ready, and my agent's ready, we'll tell you what the decision is. But at this moment in time, I'm just trying to get myself fit.
Finally, Watford have made a decision, and they've appointed Roy Hodgson as their latest manager.
Does Roy not play golf?
What, you suggesting he should...
Yeah, I mean...
He's got other things to do. What's he, 74?
I know. Fish.
Is this a good appointment?
Do you know, bearing in mind they're in the deep doo-doo here...
Yes.
And there's not that much of this... Well, there's a fair chunk of the season to play. And they're always changing managers anyway. I think through to the summer... Yeah, this is something that may give them half a chance.
Right.
They thought that with Ranieri, but it wasn't working. When we saw Watford smashing Man United, you just thought, right, maybe there's a chance. But it just went south. And I think they're bringing a guy in who is like Ranieri, but he's super experienced. He organised Palace in a magnificent way, but it's very short term. But that's what Watford need. They need a short term solution to get them through to the summer and still be in the Premier League. I just can't answer. I don't think personally with their playing squad is going to be enough.
Stevie?
Yeah, it's a playing squad. You know, if they can't, you know, up until Ranieri, they'd kind of tried to go about winning games in the Premier League by playing football. And they just weren't equipped for it. Certainly defensively, they weren't equipped for it. And then when you bring Ranieri in, you think, okay, there looks to be a real change in attitude, and it's going to be a lot tighter, certainly. I mean, you look at what he did at Leicester. They won the title by being a solid unit first and foremost, but then had quality around the field that would win them games. And you felt that's how they were going to do it, but those players that they've got didn't seem to respond to that, because I didn't notice any sort of change in playing style. Now, you'd have to think that Roy is going to be an old-fashioned guy who's going to stick his fingers in people's faces and say, right, this is what you do, and you better do it, because if you don't, I don't care whether it's the first minute or the second minute, if you don't do as I'm telling you, you're sitting beside me. Because that's the only way this can change. But as I said, I'm a little worried. If they can't respond to Ranieri, what's the chances they don't respond to Roy either?
Does he last till the end of the season, Gab?
I can't see them having four coaches this season, to be honest. But hey, never say never. Yeah, I imagine he does. It's funny because 20 years ago, the Pozzo family owned Watford. They also owned Udinese in Italy. They brought him back to Serie A with great fanfare. They spent some money on the team. They were ninth in the league in December. And then Roy gave an interview that they didn't like, and they sacked him on the spot. And then they avoided relegation by 1 point that year. So I love the fact that 20 years on, when they're both 20 years older, Pozzo and Roy, Pozzo now 80 years old, the father, of course, kind of saying, right, let's let bygones be bygones, and let's do this, and let's make up for what happened 20 years ago.
Well, if he senses that it's all going pear-shaped and he's not getting the tune out of them, all he has to do, Gab, is give a really awkward interview and get a quick payday again.
Oh, yes.
Jump ship.
That is it. We are done. Just a reminder, Transfer Talk is with you every single day over on the website to keep you up to date. All the latest news regarding the possible transfers between now and the end of the window.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you saw yesterday's show, we showed this front page from the Barcelona newspaper Sport saying, Milagro, miracle, as Barca beat Alaves by 1-0. You weren't particularly happy with that headline, Craig. As,
I didn't quite get the context of it.
Gab and Steve with us. We thought we'd ask what was the biggest miracle, then Barcelona winning or Manchester United winning, Stevie?
You can't seriously look at Barcelona beating a team that look as though they're going to get relegated and call it a miracle. What did they score in the first minute or the last minute? I mean, seriously? At least Manchester United was against a team who are fighting tooth and nail with them to get the top four spot and get into the Champions League. And Alaves, we're talking about a team that before a ball was kicked this year, everybody said they were going to get relegated. So I don't get how you can turn Barcelona beating Alaves 1-0, even though they scored in the last minute, as a miracle. No.
Gab, which game for you lies in the miracle world?
I think it's the context of the game. It's the context of how poor Barcelona were in this game, and the frozen pitch and all everything that kind of went on, and they get the last gasp winner. I think that's the argument. That's what might make that more of a miracle than Manchester United at home against West Ham, chucking on, you know, striker after striker after striker. And then West Ham make a defensive mistake and Rashford scores. But in that sense, I would say Barcelona is more of a miracle win than Manchester United at Old Trafford.
Do you know what was a miracle?
What's that, Craig Burley?
Do you know what was a miracle?
Tell me.
All this whinging from Barcelona that
yes.
continues,
yep.
nonsense. It's a miracle, having watched the game like you and I did, that we're now hearing the pitch was so frozen. Can you remember anybody slipping over?
No, not really. No.
Because normally when a pitch is very frozen, the studs or the cleats, call it what you like, will not go into the surface.
Yeah, that's true. It wasn't noticeable.
And then people would tend to fall over. We didn't see that.
No.
So the pitch couldn't have been that frozen, but Barcelona were poor, unsurprisingly.
So really, it was a miracle on ice.
Oh, shut up.
That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much, as always, for watching. Be sure to stay tuned, though, for extra time. Frank is back with us, as is Stevie. Craig as well, to answer some of your questions. Some interesting ones as well to address. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much for your questions. Craig with me here in the studio. We've got Gab Marcotti, Frank LaBeouf, and Stevie's a bit chilly. Hence his hair standing up on end.
Yeah.
That's frozen.
Yeah, it's frozen in place in this thing. Blimmin' heck, mate.
Haircuts are expensive around Connecticut.
Yeah.
It's the inflation, see?
How much do you pay for your haircut, Stevie?
$22 plus tip.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's $21 too much. Well, that job you're getting.
We know it's going to be, what, two on the side, three on the top?
Don't encourage him.
Don't encourage him.
He's just jealous. He doesn't get a haircut.
What's that in my head? What's that?
Yeah. Candy floss.
He's holding on. Just don't give the top shot.
I'll tell you what,
then. Up too high.
Hey, Tom running face the other way.
Nobody wants to see my backside.
Right, let's get on with it. Gab, is Morata off to Barcelona?
Well, obviously, if the Vlahovic deal goes through on paper, they'd be getting another center forward. But I don't think Juve see it that way. I think they would like to keep Morata just to have another striking option there. Morata can play with Vlahovic. Barcelona, we know we're interested in him. I think the difficult thing, though, from Barcelona is that the clock is ticking. And again, to get Morata, I think they need to shed more costs, which means getting somebody else off the books. And I think that's difficult with just a few days left. But certainly, I'd be very surprised if Morata is back at Juve next summer.
Stevie, the other day after Barcelona against Alaves, Xavi, Frankie de Jong and Jordi Alba said in the post-game interview that the field was frozen and it was really tough to cope with that. How exactly do these conditions really impact the team's playing?
Well, it's impossible to play properly on a field that's frozen. You know, number one, you're always concerned about your balance. So you're kind of moving, your movement is, you're moving gingerly because you're not sure whether you're going to go flat on your face or slip. You know, the fact that there's frozen patches on the field means that the ball, when it hits it, will go twice as fast off it as opposed to normal grass. I mean, there are so many things. Can you imagine falling over on your shoulder on a frozen field? I mean, there are just so many problems that you just don't normally have to deal with. Put it this way, you shouldn't be playing on a field that has frozen patches on it. Put it that way.
We played at Southampton's old ground, the Dell, years ago, when I was at Derby, and half the pitch was frozen. All the way down the length of the pitch.
Okay.
And the other half at the far side, was frozen, and this side was fine because of the stadium, the stand, the shadow and the sun. I said to the ref, we went out for a pitch inspection, and to be honest, I didn't really want to play anyway. And I said, we need to call this off. It's a lottery. And he wanted to play it, and we played it, but it was a lottery. As soon as you stepped onto that other half of the pitch, you couldn't keep your feet. And of course, the fans in the stands, they didn't know this.
Yeah.
And they were wondering what the hell was going on. I mean, it was just crazy. But the ref, he obviously wanted to get some sort of
bonus.
Payday bonus for playing, so he played it. But it's a pointless exercise.
Frank, you played on a frozen pitch before?
Oh, yes. I played 5 years for Strasbourg, and every winter, because it's only when I played it for Chelsea that I realized that some pitch could be heated. And we didn't have that in France, and so I played like 3 or 4 games a year, every season for 5 years, on the frozen pitch. And the same as Craig mentioned, on the stadium was frozen, half of the stadium was frozen on the length because of the shadow of the stand. So it was impossible to play. You lose your balance. It's like playing on the concrete, even worse, because you can't stop. When you want to stop and change direction, you're going to slip and you're going to be on the floor. So it's a real nightmare. And if they once in a time it happens in Spain, that's not a big deal. We used to have that every winter.
To Gab, how many goals do you think?
We played.
Go on, Steve.
Dan, we played an FA Cup tie, a third round cup tie at York City in 84, I believe it was. And back then, the geniuses thought that if you put straw on the field, it would stop it freezing. And so 2 days before, the complete area, the complete pitch was covered in straw, and they took the straw off the morning of the game and said, right, you're okay. What a lot of nonsense. Honestly, it was like skating on ice. It was a joke.
That seems to be, I think that might have been the last time he'd had his hair cut as well.
Well, you
it?
Think so?
I say, what, he could have put my hair on the field instead of straw. He'd done a better job.
He used to get it cut. He's gone to Florida.
He's gone on holiday, isn't he?
He's gone on holiday. As I said, he's gone.
Some of us got enough to put on a field.
Listen, look at this. I can't stop it. It's growing everywhere.
Oh, yeah. We don't need more details of that. How many goals do you think that Vlahovic is going to score for Juventus this season?
Assuming, again, he moves to Juventus because this deal isn't done yet. It's funny because on paper, you know, you figure you move to a better team, expect to score more goals. The way Allegri's been playing this season, I'm not entirely sure. With a fake Chiesa, with a happy Dybala around him, with Locatelli teeing him up with those through balls, I might go as far and say 15 and half a season. With the current Juve, honestly, I think they'd be happy just with like 10 or 12. Between now and the end of the season, as long as it gets them in the top four and maybe even a run in the Champions League.
Let's switch gears slightly. With all the talk of Craig becoming the next Bear Grylls, that's of course with your new beard and going off camping in the woods.
Wept outside last night.
Yeah, that wasn't voluntary. What's the scariest encounter you've ever had with an animal? Wow.
Oh, don't even give him the time of day to start a story.
Why can't Stevie tell a story?
Don't even give him.
Stevie, have you got a story?
Well, I've got two. I think the one he's referring to is when he started running away when I kidded on the bear was chasing us. I think I've told that story before.
Yep.
I actually had another one myself. I was walking the dog up by the reservoir, and there's bears and all kinds up there. So I got back to the car, and I had left a poo bag right in the middle of the path, about 40 yards from where the car was parked. So I had that dilemma, do I just leave it? I go and get it, so of course, being a good guy, I went and got it. Anyway, I got to the poo bag, and as I got there, a bear was about 10 foot away from me, hanging onto a tree, growling at me.
Well, of course it growled at you. You left a poo bag
littering
in its area.
Yeah, I tell you what, unfortunately, I didn't jump or scream at it. I just calmly started walking backwards, keeping my eye on it, and it sort of made its way down the bottom of the tree, and then I just turned and went for it back to the car.
Did you need a poo bag after that, Stevie?
It was a trash bag, not a poo bag.
Okay, Frank, animal encounters?
Yes, and I was in LA and I was with a lady, and we decided to go to, it was at night, and we decided, I don't know why, we decided to go in the forest where close to Los Angeles, and I was with my motorbike, and suddenly we faced, no, you won't have the whole story, because nothing happened, in fact, because as soon as we reached the place, we faced like two wild dogs, and we had to drop back, fortunately my bike was powerful enough to get out of the problem. So nothing happened, guys. It's just to mention the story with the wild dogs.
Gab, animal encounters.
I hope it was a motorbike.
So many years ago, I was in.
Go on, Gab.
No, it's a critical detail to the story, because I'm just imagining Frank pedaling off on a normal bike and a little push bike away from the wild dogs.
Tandem. But, it's a tandem.
Motorbike, but not a bike.
I was in South Africa years ago in the countryside, and they have these ostrich farms there, and you can visit the ostrich farm, and they're kept in these sort of large outdoor pens. And back then, this was before you had phones, you had cameras on your phone. I borrowed my, at the time, my wife's fancy camera. And I wanted to take a picture. And so, because I'm obviously taller than she is, I'm sort of leaning over the pen to take a picture of the far away ostriches, not realizing that ostriches actually move very, very fast, and they're very, very vicious. And from the side, this massive ostrich suddenly comes at me, and I dropped the camera inside the pen, and then I had to wait forever for the ostriches to sort of get away, to get it back out. But this was before YouTube, so then later I go on YouTube and there's all sorts of videos of ostriches chasing humans. I mean, honestly, you could have nightmares about this because they're really big, they're really vicious.
Dan, I have another story, by the way. I'm sorry.
No.
If,
no.
Yes.
It's just you.
And it's a nice one. No, okay. It's a nice one. It was okay. in Melbourne. I was in with Lilian Thuram, and we visited the zoo, and we went to see kangaroos. And the guy offered us the possibility of going into the cage with the big cage with the kangaroos. So we were there, and I have some pictures of it where we see the kangaroo and it's nice and everything. And suddenly the kangaroo got up and tried to smash the two of us, you know, like boxing. Well, we were lucky. It missed us, but that was a hell of an adventure, I tell you, because I think it would have knocked at us. Yeah, that was scary.
Oh, yeah, man. You know what, Frank? I'm sorry. I would imagine that a big, fully grown ostrich is far scarier than a little kangaroo trying to punch two grown men professional athletes, no?
Who wins a fight, an ostrich or a kangaroo?
Kangaroo. I don't know.
You and kangaroo, Stevie. Good. This is a high caliber analysis here.
Easy.
Okay. In the wake of the incredible NFL playoffs,
the kangaroo feint to go with the left and get you with the right.
There you are, Bosch.
Yeah.
Nice style. In the wake of in the wake of the incredible NFL playoffs this past weekend, how do the Eagles get on this week? Oh, they're out, aren't they? God, that's it. What is the most incredible game you played in, saw in person?
You know this. It's not the question.
What?
It needs time.
Oh, so you should have, yeah. The producer said he tried to call you earlier to preempt.
Called me five times. He's doing my head in already.
He didn't answer. Frank.
I did answer. I called him back after he texted me four times.
The most incredible game you played in, saw in person.
Well, the most incredible game, it would be the World Cup final. It would be the quarter final of the FA Cup with Chelsea, where we were losing 2-0 against Liverpool, and we won 4-2. That was crazy, and we won because of Mark Hughes, and I think Craig was there. The game that I saw. No, nothing that I recall. No, I like Craig, right. You know, he called me before and I think about it.
Come on, Mr. Producer. I nearly gave his name away there.
Well, Mike, you can say his name. Why? Oh, do you think he's going to get hate mail? Who's going to track him down?
Stalker.
Stevie?
You could start stalking him now off the back of this.
I said it was a funny one. I went scouting to Costa Rica. And I went to see him again with Saprissa, and I can't remember the team they were playing, but it was a small team. And of course, for them to get any sort of result was huge. Anyway, the small team was winning 2-1, and there was 5 minutes to go, and the small team's goalkeeper got injured and had to come off. So one of the players on the field went in goal. A sub came on, and one of the players went in goal. And so there was about 10 seconds left to go in the game, and the ball's played to the goalkeeper, and he puts his foot on it, and he bends over, and so he's bending over, and he's got his hands like this, about
12 inches either side of the ball, and he's looking at the Saprissa centre forward going, come on then, and whenever you get here, I'm just going to pick it up and I'm going to waste more time. Anyway, of course, it was a bit of a standoff, and eventually the Saprissa guy went for the ball, and the goalie went like that to pick the ball up and missed it, and the guy put it in the back of the net. It was 2-2. The referee blew the whistle. It was like, I mean, you couldn't make it up. Try to be even too
my
clever.
I tell you what, even my hair's growing the length of time it took to tell that story.
Holy smokes. Well, it's funny, I can still see it now. Please don't like that. Go on then. Go
Stevie,
on then.
Tell us again. I never got it all. I missed the start. Here. Tell us again.
What springs to mind? Anyway?
No, nothing really. I tell you what, one that just springs to mind is I wasn't there in person.
What are you doing with your arms?
Well, I'm moving them about.
What are you doing?
You're not stretching your hand at the moment. I'll have an even sorer one in a minute if you don't shut up. The Brazil 1982 World Cup, Brazil, Italy.
That's your VHS, isn't it?
VHS.
VHS, yeah, you're 82. VHS.
Socrates and Junior. Yeah. Sorry, Falcao.
There we go.
Only to be undone by
Falcao.
Italy.
Final.
We need to get those questions in advance. I'm sorry.
Okay, otherwise, I'm not in charge of them, am I? I just read them when I sit down.
And Socrates. Right. Socrates,
for
Gab.
Greg. Socrates.
For Gab, what is worse, ketchup on pasta, pineapple on pizza, or well done steak?
Oh.
Well, it's ketchup on. It's all really bad, but the ketchup on pasta is just completely nonsensical. and they're just simply wrong. And look, you know my thoughts about pineapple on pizza, but if some people want to co-opt pizza, culturally appropriate it for their purposes, and they think it tastes good with pineapple and ham, whatever, that's your prerogative. Equally, if you're Ali Moreno and you like your steak extremely well done, for whatever reason, like it's freaking beef jerky or something, that's your prerogative. But come on, ketchup on pasta makes no sense. I don't think anybody, I don't even think that's a thing. I think it's just something like, I don't think anybody over the age of 8 has ever even actually done that.
Right.
Have they?
Bearing in mind, I've sat in a restaurant with, I'm going to name him. Shall we name him?
Steve McManaman.
Steve McManaman.
Yes.
Bearing in mind, you know this story. He lifted the French fries and put them on top of the penne pasta.
Yeah.
Right. Are you then allowed to put ketchup on?
Oh, yes.
But
Craig, even Macca then stopped short of putting Heinz on top of the pasta and the fries, right? So there are limits even to this.
It'd be great if he did.
When I saw him do that,
hey, Gab.
It was brilliant.
Yeah, I bet. Oh, Stevie's off.
Gab, can you put fries in soup? No. That's acceptable.
You put fries in soup?
Yeah.
I don't genuinely see why you would do that, because normally if you eat a french fry, you would want sort of...
I'm sensing you may have done this, Steve.
Soggy?
Stevie, I'm sensing you...
Oh, my God.
I'm sensing you may have done this. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct, yes.
Why?
Why?
Why not?
What's wrong with you?
I don't see why not.
What do you mean, why not? Who in the right mind?
I don't
mind?
Know, taste?
You're supposed to dip bread in
culture,
soup and...
taste.
Too sorry to me.
I don't know.
Well, what's the difference of dipping bread to dipping putting fries in them? What's the difference?
What's the difference to dipping
bread? Oh, yeah, yeah.
See?
When you go to a restaurant and they might bring you some soup...
I want to die right now.
They may bring you some bread with the soup.
Love it.
And the starters. They don't remember any restaurant bringing me fries to dip in the soup.
Frank, last word on this.
Yeah, waiter, would you mind getting the fries to dip in the French onion soup?
Frank, last word on this to you, Frank.
Ketchup
on pasta, pineapple on pizza, or well done steak.
Bread and fries. What's the difference?
Well, what do you want to ask me, Dan? And do you want a last word on that? I just want to throw up right now, you know. I love Stevie. But really, Stevie, I don't want to defend the French fries because they're not from France, they're from Belgium. But really, don't do that to the Belgic people. You know, you're insulting them. You know, come on, don't put French fries in the soup. That's a question of culture, taste,
never
you know, style,
well,
way of living your
soup.
Life. No, not that's the, impossible.
I've not,
you
I've
cannot
only met,
do that.
I've only, I think there's only one man in the entire planet who's ever dipped French fries in soup. And I think it's just a coincidence he's on this show tonight.
Oh, man. Is it a real thing? So the big questions we've addressed today is do you dip French fries in soup? And who wins a fight between a kangaroo and an ostrich? Good. Give us the sports Emmy now. ESPN FC is back tomorrow. Be sure to join us. We'll be looking back at some football. What? Ivory Coast against Egypt.